Please be seated, everyone. The next case on calendar this morning is case number 63092, JED Property versus Coastline Holdings, Nevada Corp., combined with 63359. Justice Perry is another member of this panel, and he is unavoidably absent this morning, but he will listen to the tape recording of argument and participate in the decision. Are you ready to proceed?
Yes.
Good morning. May it please this Honorable Court, Craig Markey on behalf of JED Property, LLC. The issue presented here today, although there are three specific issues, two of which are essentially are derivative of the first. The first issue addresses whether or not under NRS 107082 subpart 2, a trustee sale is required to be re-noticed pursuant to NRS 107080 if that sale has been orally postponed three times. In the underlying action, the district court determined that it was only necessary after a fourth notice of sale, and in so doing, granted the motion that was filed by the respondent in this case to dismiss the counterclaims of JED.
Isn't that correct? Don't you get to the third postponement by the time you post the fourth sale?
Justice Sato, essentially, the way that the statute reads, when you look at a clear interpretation of that language, it clearly and unambiguously states that if the trustee sale is orally postponed three times, there's an initial notice of a sale that's placed pursuant to the deed of trust and the notice of sale and election to sell. Then there is an election that the trustee and or the beneficiary make to orally postpone it. The oral postponements in this case, and it's undisputed in this record, that there in fact were three oral postponements of this sale. The issue becomes the determination of what is required as a result of that third oral pronouncement of a continuation of the sale. Under NRS 107082 sub 2, it expressly provides that if such a sale, which is a non-judicial foreclosure sale, has been postponed by oral proclamation three times, any new sale information must be provided by notice provided by NRS 107080. So the statute very clearly on its face does not say after a third notice of oral pronouncement. It specifically says if it has been orally proclaimed three times to be continued. So in this context, again, there's no dispute. There were three oral pronouncements continuing the underlying sale. The first notice said it on June 14, 2012 for a sale date of July 6, 2012. It was then for the first time orally postponed to August 3, 2012. It was orally postponed for the second time to August 31, 2012.
Let me hear that again. Back up.
Sure. So in the underlying facts of this case, the original notice of trustee sale was recorded on June 14th of 2012.
Correct.
Setting a sale date for July 6th of 2012.
That's a setting. That's not a postponement.
Correct.
Okay.
The very first postponement then was made on July 6th, 2012, setting it to August 3rd, 2012. That's the first pronouncement.
Okay.
The second oral postponement occurred on August 3rd, 2012, setting the sale to August 31st, 2012. And then on August 31st, 2012, the third oral pronouncement continuing the sale was done, setting it to September 28th, 2012. So under the clear and unambiguous language of NRS 107082, sub 2, because the sale was orally postponed and proclaimed and continued three times, the statute required a new notice of a trustee sale to be issued.
If the time or place changed.
Actually, it provides for a new notice to be provided. It does not indicate if there's a notice of time change. The way that the case law and the statute has been interpreted, in the event that there is a change in the location or in a different time, whether that's in a first oral pronouncement, second, or third, there would be a requirement for a new notice to advise the potential bidders in the marketplace of that continuation and the difference of time or the location. This statutory provision expressly provides that upon that third pronouncement, a new notice of trustee sale is required, which the purpose of that is it goes into the legislative history. If your honors respectfully believe that for some reason this statute is unclear and is ambiguous on its face, then you're entitled to look to the legislative history. And in this particular case, the legislative history has a clear adoption of wanting to prevent gamesmanship by banks, trustees, and beneficiaries of making it essentially a war of attrition. The purpose of a trustee sale is to obtain the maximum benefit of a sale, obtain the highest value at market price so that the seller, the bank, or the trustee will ultimately receive the highest value in relation to the outstanding indebtedness that's in the market, and the buyer will receive a property at market price. So,
well, but the same policy is served by this statute regardless of whether we call it the third or the fourth. If you read it to say after three it must be re-noticed, that same policy is served. It's just moving the ball down the field a little bit, right?
Yes, Justice Pickering, that is a true statement. The question is, what is the best value for the bang of the buck of the notice here? And when you look at the circumstances of this particular case and you look at the factual setting that was presented here, Coastline Re was on notice that there was a potential bidder that was willing to pay more than ultimately what their $1.475 million credit bid was going to be. There was a bidder that was willing to come in and pay $2 million for that particular property. Knowing that, and based upon correspondence, which is in the record that we've submitted, the email exchange between myself and counsel for Gordon Silver, indicating that it's the best interest of all parties to just continue this sale for another period of time. We advised them of the pertinent law, our interpretation of that. They elected not to do so, knowing what the consequences would be in the event that they went forward. In that particular email exchange, and again, going back to the benefit, if someone was willing to pay $5.25 million more for a property within the course of a couple of days of notice, how would they have been harmed by continuing? Logic and reason say they wouldn't have been harmed at all. The market would have benefited because potentially that person and or others would have come in, realized that there was an interest in someone paying more for that property, and the highest market value would have been obtained at that time. So when you look at that purpose in the legislative history as far as avoiding gamesmanship, preventing wars of attrition, that purpose of an interpretation of the statute to require a new notice upon the third oral pronouncement is certainly good public policy for this state. Now, the United States District Court for the District of Nevada has addressed three cases thus far, two of which support the appellant's position in this case. And we've cited both of those cases in the reasoning from Judge Navarro in the Fitzwater decision and former Chief Judge Hunt in the Hampton decisions. And just Judge Navarro in the first case of Fitzsimmons recognized that it was an issue of first impression before the Nevada federal courts because there was no authority from the Nevada state court interpreting the statute. Judge Navarro, in her opinion, expressly found that only upon a third pronouncement must defendants re-notice a defaulting party pursuant to procedures described in NRS 107.080, referencing the statute. And Judge Navarro determined the court finds that it is more reasonable to read NRS 107.082 sub 2 to require only a notice of a trustee sale because the statute applies only after or only if the actual sale was postponed three times. Essentially, there's two types of notices. Again, a notice of a trustee sale, which merely sets the time and place and informs the market of what that particular circumstance will be, as well as a notice of default and election to sell, which has certainly much more restrictive requirements of timing as well as placement of notices and a little bit longer lead time to re-notice a sale. So Justice Pickering and Sato, when looking at just Judge Navarro's decision, she made it essentially clear that the better public policy and the more reasonable interpretation was to require only a notice of a trustee sale upon the third oral pronouncement. Former Chief Judge Roger Hunt in the Hampton decision also adopted that reasoning, noting that because a notice of a trustee sale includes only information about the actual sale of the property, the court concluded that NRS 107082 sub 2 required filing only a new notice of trustee sale and not a notice of default and election to sell. Now, the contrary authority that the federal district court had entered is readily distinguishable from the circumstances of this case, as well as just the dynamics of the case itself, which was the Florio decision. The Florio matter was a pro se participant who filed a whole host of motions before the court. In reconciling all of the improprieties of the filings that had been made, the judge made a 40,000-foot decision of summarily denying Ms. Florio's petition with respect to her arguments on the invalidity of the sale. Notably, Judge Due, who entered the Florio decision, did not even reference either the Fitzwater or the Hampton decisions, which were precedent for the court at that time. So when looking at the circumstances of this case in light of those federal opinions, the petitioner respectfully submits that logic, reason, and a clear and unambiguous reading of that statute unequivocally required that the respondent in this case file a notice of trustee sale after that third, as a result of that third oral pronouncement, that it was required. So if they wanted to go forward on that September 28th date, when they orally postponed it on August 31st, a new sale, notice of sale letter was required, placing the time and the hearing location for the market and for all parties interested. Based upon that, the lower court erred in its determination of dismissing the counterclaims. It also erred as a matter of law in awarding the attorney's fees and costs to the respondent in this matter. I'll respectfully submit that at this time, save a few moments for a rebuttal if I may. If the court has any questions, I'd be happy to address them.
Thank you. You have roughly 4 minutes of rebuttal.
Thank you, Justice Pickering.
Joel Henriot on behalf of Respondent Coastline Re Holdings. The statute is not ambiguous because there is only one reading of the statute that applies plain meaning to each of the terms in the statute and harmonizes them. And that is that you have to do the formal written re-notice only after you have, only if you have postponed the sale by oral proclamation, and that has happened, past tense. So, again, it has to be re-noticed formally only if the sale already, quote, has been postponed by oral proclamation.
So, as I suggested, on the fourth notice.
The fourth notice, right. So you have the original sale date, and then you postpone it one time. You have the sale that results from the first postponement. Then you have the second postponement, results in the second postponed sale date. You can postpone it again by oral proclamation. Then if it doesn't sell that time, then you would need to start the formal process all over again. And here there is no dispute that the sale date, that the property sold at the sale which resulted from the third oral postponement. So the only way that appellant's argument makes sense is if the third oral postponement isn't a real oral postponement. If all you can do when you are postponing it for the third time is just orally take it off and then formally re-notice again. But the statute does allow three oral postponements. And if there is any dispute, it seems to be what the meaning of oral postponement is. But subsection 1 of the statute, I think, clarifies that. It clarifies what is necessary to constitute an oral postponement. It's not just coming out onto the steps and saying, hey, we're not going forward today. It actually establishes the new date and specifies that it will be same place, same time. And what postponement by oral proclamation means necessarily is that the oral proclamation is sufficient to achieve the new sale date. I think that is illustrated by itself in the fact that Appellant does not contest that the first two postponements were invalid, even though there was no written notice, because that is what oral proclamation means. It means that nothing further is required in writing. And it makes sense. The legislature did decide to draw a line, to say we don't want oral postponements to go on continually. At some point, you need to start the process over again. They chose the number three. The number three makes sense. It's a concept that we are readily familiar with. When you are at bat, you get three opportunities to swing. When you rub the lamp and the genie comes out, you get three wishes. And so they are appealing to the intuition to look at this and say, clearly, you have three opportunities to postpone orally. If it doesn't sell at that sale, then you would need to start over again. I think that appellant's interpretation is not only strained and would nullify the three opportunities to postpone by oral proclamation, but it would render the statute misleading, downright misleading, because it sure seems to allow the opportunity to postpone merely by oral proclamation three times. And if it doesn't mean that, if it means that, well, really, you only get two oral postponements, and the third time you would have to renotice, then I think it lays a trap that the legislature did not intend.
Are there any other states that have statutes like this that we drew this statute from?
Not that we drew it from, but I can tell from the legislative history, there was a California statute that allowed for three oral postponements. And there were cases that interpreted that statute the way that Judge Due interpreted this statute and the way that Judge Denton did. Interestingly, the California statute was amended in 2005 at the same time that our legislature was enacting a similar statute. California went to a different rubric where instead of allowing just three oral postponements, they said, if you postpone it past more than a year, regardless of how many oral postponements, then you need to formally renotice. So it went on that year.
But our statute was not, was the verbiage identical to the California pre-2005?
No, it was not identical. It was similar in that it allowed for three oral postponements. Appellant refers to the case law interpreting this, and there are the three federal unpublished orders. But not only are they unpublished, but in two of those cases, appellant refers to dicta in the unpublished orders, because in Judge Hunt's order and in Judge Navarro's order, whether or not you get three oral postponements was not the issue in that case, or either of those cases. In both instances, the district court mentioned the statute in passing, but only to draw contrast to how far removed from the line, wherever it was from the facts of those cases. The only federal district court, that only federal district court judge to have actually addressed this issue and had to address this issue with was Judge Due in the Florio case, who reached the same determination that Judge Denton did here. There has been reference, we've seen a lot of reference to this bidder who would have come and paid $2 million for the property. But the problem is, I think, with that contention, threefold. First, there's no evidence of that. We have a representation of that from counsel, but we don't have an affidavit from that potential bidder. We don't even have a name of that potential bidder. Just a representation that bidder was out there, that generous bidder who would have paid an additional $600,000. But secondly, it doesn't matter, because the trustee is not compelled to wait until the debtor is satisfied with the body of bidders. This was a legal sell. They didn't have to wait. And there would have been prejudice to us if we had waited and not proceeded on September 28th, because if we had to postpone again, at that point we would have had to start the formal notice process all over again. If we had postponed it again, then we would have had to record the notice, to serve it on all interested parties, to post it in the public place in town for 20 days, to run it in the review journal 3 weeks in a row. So there would have been prejudice, and there was no reason to hold off just because of a representation that there might be a bidder coming along who would pay more. There seems to be no dispute with the district court's fee award or the district court's order dismissing all the counterclaims, except to the extent that those decisions were based on the judge's finding that the foreclosure sale was legal.
That decision right, so was that's correct. Overturned and then implied, okay. But otherwise not. That's yeah, right.
Precisely. Does the court have any questions?
I do not.
Very well. The judgment should be affirmed.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's very rare that I have the opportunity to actually say this expression. I'll avail myself of the opportunity. Expressio unus est exclusio alteris, because the expression of one is the exclusion of another. If the statute were as the respondent contended, then the language unequivocally would have read differently than what it actually does in NRS 107.082 sub 2. It would have indicated after a third oral pronouncement, or it would have indicated on the fourth oral pronouncement or notice of a sale. That's clearly not what this language says. The plain language indicates that if such a sale, a non-judicial foreclosure sale, has been postponed by proclamation three times, that's it. In this particular case, the initial notice of sale was set for July 6th. First oral pronouncement set it to August 3rd. The second oral pronouncement set it to August 31st. The third oral pronouncement set it to September 28th. Based upon the clear and unambiguous reading of this statute, it absolutely triggered the notice requirements set forth in 107.082 sub 2.
For the September 28th?
For the September 28th sale, yes, Your Honor. This isn't an issue of looking at anything more than the plain language itself. There is no ambiguity, although if the court believes that there is, looking to the legislative history, it clearly indicates an interest in wanting to ensure that this process is fair, that it is appropriate that bidders are brought to the marketplace to achieve the highest value for the property possible, and to avoid gamesmanship on the part of banks and beneficiaries, and essentially warding off competitive bidding so that they can purchase the property at a lower value on a credit bid and then turn around and initiate foreclosure proceedings and breach of guarantee actions to maximize their recovery on some difference. The whole purpose of this statute is to balance the marketplace and to make it fair for debtors as well as for the beneficiaries and trustees involved with these transactions. When you look at Judge Dew's decision in the Florio opinion, as I indicated, there are a whole host of discrepancies. Although the Judge Hunt and Judge Navarro opinions were, to the most extent, dicta, in order to reach the conclusions that they reached in the cases, they had to go through that analysis to interpret what they believed Nevada law is and should be in interpreting those provisions. Their determinations clearly are fair and balanced because it puts the burden to make sure that this statute is followed. If it said after, if it said forth, the language clearly would have said that. It does not. It clearly reads upon a third postponement, and that is exactly the reason.
It doesn't read that way. It says has been.
Correct. And so in this particular case, Justice Sata, you are correct. In this case, it has been orally postponed three times because the first postponement went from July 6th to August 3rd, August 3rd to August 31st, and August 31st to September 28th.
Well, the problem I'm having is if the statute's inelegant, there's no question about that, but it seems to me to have it be a fait accompli that you have indeed postponed by oral proclamation. The third one equally is allowed, must be at the same date and time. I mean, same time and location. What you're saying is paragraph one would only be allowed to occur twice, so it would be an impossibility to postpone by oral proclamation the third time. You're reading one out of the statute.
Trying to read actually them harmoniously together, because if you look at the provision of 107.082 sub 1, it expressly reads, if a sale of property pursuant to NRS 107.080 is postponed by oral proclamation, the sale must be postponed to a later date at the same time and same location.
Right. Okay.
All that's saying is, for consistency's sake, if you're going to do a notice and an election to sell and you're going to change it, you're obligated under sub 1 to use the same location and same time. If for some reason you change the location of the sale, so instead of on the courthouse steps, maybe you do it over at one of the other locations around town, you're obligated to give notice under sub 1. That's separate and distinct from the notice provision that we're addressing in sub 2. Sub 2 is a separate category. It is saying, notwithstanding here now what we've just discussed in number 1, if such a sale has been postponed by proclamation three times, then you're required to give that notice of sale, which would be the additional
right. My point is that the third oral proclamation notice wouldn't be able to suffice if you had to give notice under 107.080.
And again, there's the two different types of notice with respect to the notice of default in the election to sell, which requires posting. It requires a 90-day time frame. You have to
I understand all that.
Yes.
I'm just struggling with the wording of the statute.
As we have been as well, Justice Pickering. So certainly looking at the bigger picture, as we indicated, we believe that the more reasonable and appropriate interpretation of the statute, as the plain and unambiguous language reflects, is that upon that third oral pronouncement, that a new notice of trustee sale was required.
But then the oral pronouncement is no good. It's of no consequence.
Well, the oral pronouncement would then trigger whether or not it was requiring a new notice under sub 080 for additional time and additional disclosures or not.
Yeah, I'm sorry to pester you with it. It's a difficult statute.
It is, Justice Pickering.
And thank you for your remarks, everyone, and your excellent briefing. The court will be in recess.
Thank you.